This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Take a listen to a conversation with a Chittix Junior High School student and someone way up high.
This is Jack again. How often do you go into space for spacewalks? Over.
Well, Jack, we don't go too often, but we actually went out. We had 3 spacewalks in the last couple of weeks. So maybe we go out maybe 3 to 5 times a year, depending on what kind of work we have to do. Over.
Astronaut Joseph Acaba aboard the International Space Station chats with kids in Normal. Plus, Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers play in Bloomington, and the mayor of Bloomington pays a visit after a city council rebuke. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Earlier this month, we told you about a 13-year-old named Dhruv Reba who was planning to make a call from Chittix Junior High School in Normal to the International Space Station via ham radio. That call took place yesterday. 6 students were able to speak for about 8 minutes with astronaut Joseph Acaba, one of the 3 men on board the space station. GLT's Judy Valente was there to record the conversation.
The 16 students from Chittix and the Challenger Learning Center at Heartland Community College had been working on their questions for weeks. They even practiced how to ask the questions over a ham radio microphone. Nervous looks on their faces turned to broad smiles as on the 3rd try, ham radio operator Dhruv Reba finally made contact with the International Space Station as it passed over central Illinois at about 10:30 a.m. Monday. The students were able to ask 23 questions of astronaut Joseph Acaba, one of the 3 astronauts on board. Questions ranging from what's it like to look down on Earth from space, what his favorite space movie is, and what he misses most about Earth when he's on a mission.
NA1SS, this is W9AML, over. NA1SS, this is Whiskey 9 Alpha Mike Lima, over.
This is November Alpha 1, Sierra. I have you loud and clear. Over.
This is Dhruv from the Chittix Junior High School in Normal, Illinois. Are you ready for the first question? Over.
Welcome to the International Space Station. I am ready. Over.
This is Shloka. How do you prepare mentally and physically to go to the ISS?
Hey, Shloka, when we first get hired, we have about 2 years of initial training, and then once we get assigned, we have another 2 years of training, so we have a lot of studying to do, and we got to stay healthy so we can work hard up here. Over.
This is Michael. What must you do to prepare for coming back to Earth and its gravity? Over.
Yeah, so Earth's gravity is strong, so we work out every day for about 2 hours on the International Space Station. Over.
This is Siri. What did you do when you were a child that helped you get to where you are today? Over.
Hello, Siri. So I think I did good in school, so I studied those subjects that I liked, especially the sciences, engineering, and math. Over.
This is Jack. What is the most fascinating part of Earth to fly over? Over.
Jack, there's so many great places that it's hard to pick one. Our planet is so beautiful, but I really do like the blue waters of the Caribbean. Over.
This is Olivia. How would you describe space to someone who has not been there? Over.
Olivia, I would tell them it is awesome. It is the best place off the planet, and I hope you all get to come visit someday. Over.
This is Josie. What do you do to stay busy in space? Do the days go by really fast, or does it feel like a very long time up in space? Over.
Hey, Josie, so the days go by really fast up here because they keep us busy working during the week, just like any other job. And then sometimes on the weekend, we can relax a little bit. Over.
This is Claire. What is the most accurate space travel movie you have seen? Over.
Great question, Claire. Maybe Apollo 13. I think that was pretty accurate. Over.
This is Priest. How do you get exercise in space? Over.
Hey, Priest, we have a treadmill that you use a bungee, like a harness, to hold you down. We have a stationary bike. And then we also have this resistive exercise that feels like lifting weights. Over.
This is Kylie. What has been your favorite experiment so far? Over.
Hey, Kylie, I think right now I'm growing some different types of lettuce, so it's pretty neat to watch them grow from a seed, and hopefully we'll be eating fresh vegetables soon. Over.
This is Sarah. Does space have different effects other than gravity on the human body than being on Earth? If yes, do you feel those effects while in space, or are they just happening? Over.
Well, Sarah, there are quite a few different effects. Some of it is with our eyes, and so our vision does change up here. And then radiation also has an impact on our body, but we don't notice that one right away. Over.
This is Maddie. What are some difficult health effects you have to overcome aboard the ISS? Over.
So really, keeping our bones and our muscles strong is one of the most important things that we have to overcome, and that's why we work out so much. Over.
This is Natalie. When you trained for being an astronaut, did you ever train underwater? If so, is it close to what space is like? Over.
Yeah, Natalie, we have a big swimming pool in Houston, and that's where we train to do spacewalks, and it is really, really close to being in space, just without the view. Over.
This is Yajid. What are some simple tasks on Earth that can be very challenging in space? Over.
Hey, I think just keeping track of your stuff, that's usually easy on Earth because you can set it on a table, where here everything floats, and that can be a challenge. Over.
This is Quinn. What is the most unusual payload you have seen on the ISS? Over.
Great question. There was one where we were dealing with fire to see how fire acted on the space station, and that was pretty unusual. Over.
This is Amrita. What is the scariest thing that has ever happened to you while in space? Over.
Well, nothing too scary has happened to me, but going out on a spacewalk, that can be kind of scary, but it's also exciting. Over.
This is Reese. Does your view of Earth and space ever get old? Over.
No way, Reese. I can look out there every day for the rest of my life, and I don't think it would ever get old. Over.
This is Claire again. Do you think it would be safer to have a space station based on the moon instead of floating in space? Over.
Hello again, Claire. I think any time that you have to launch from Earth, it's not super safe. But I think it'd be interesting to have a moon-based space station instead of one in orbit. But I'm not sure if it would be a whole lot safer. Over.
This is Jack again. How often do you go into space for spacewalks? Over.
Well, Jack, we don't go too often, but we actually went out. We had 3 spacewalks in the last couple of weeks. So maybe we go out maybe 3 to 5 times a year, depending on what kind of work we have to do. Over.
This is Siri again. What advice would you give to young people dreaming about becoming an astronaut? Over.
Well, Siri, I would tell somebody to study the subject that they really love and to have fun with what you study, and just work really hard. And, you know, dreams can come true, and that's what I'm doing right now. Over.
This is Yajit again. What influenced you to or made you want to go in space? Over.
Well, I think looking at the guys that were walking on the moon was pretty inspirational. And then reading a lot of books about people traveling to different planets was cool and really got me excited. Over.
This is Amrita again. What do you miss most from Earth that you do not have in space? Over.
Well, we don't have weather, so I really miss that. And I miss a big, fat, juicy bacon cheeseburger. Over.
This is Maddie again. How do you protect the spacecraft from being damaged by meteoroids or other space debris? Over.
Well, Maddie, we have blankets and different layers of protection, and so if something small hits us, we're protected. But if it was something much bigger than that, then it could put a hole in the space station. Over.
NA1SS, this is W9AML, and here's Mrs. Hopper from Chittix.
This is Mrs. Hopper from Chittix Junior High. Thank you so much for the contact and your answers. We've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, thanks, Mrs. Hopper, for making this available to your students. It's a great opportunity for them, and it's a pleasure for me to be able to speak with you. And hopefully I'll get to see some of you up here in space someday and talk to you on the ham radio. Over.
This is Drew again at W9AML. And on behalf of all the students here, we wish you the best. We wish you and your crew the best of luck on the International Space Station. This is W9AML. Signing clear. Over.
thanks for all the hard work you did to make all of this possible. I know it took a long time to do, so I hope you enjoyed it, and it was definitely a pleasure up here. So NA1SS is signing off. Over and out.
That was a conversation between space station astronaut Joseph Akabam and students at Chittix Junior High in Normal. Chittix was selected as only one of 11 schools across the country to place a ham radio call to the space station. Akaba, a California native, is the first person of Puerto Rican descent selected for the astronaut program.
Support for GLT comes from the BCPA, featuring The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Victor Hugo's classic 1923 silent film with live organ accompaniment by Dennis Scott. You'll fall for Esmeralda, cheer for Quasimodo, and catch the Halloween spirit on Tuesday, October 24th. Tickets at artsblooming.org. This is 89.1 GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Bloomington City Council admonished the mayor, restricted credit card use by elected officials, discussed progress on the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, and received a presentation on a Brick Streets Master Plan. Mayor Terry Renner, thanks for stopping by Sound Ideas. We're talking about a lot of different things, including the letter delivered to you, Mayor, by a majority of the council. What is your reaction?
Well, the first is essentially we have lots of very, very important things to do, and the story that was published today, for example, in the Pantograph, is exactly the same story that was published 3 months ago. And so from my perspective, it is old wine and old bottles. It does mean that there are people who will try as much as possible to resurrect the same thing, and I think that that's what's behind us, especially the way that it was delivered. The media had a copy. Everybody in City Hall pretty much had a copy before I had a copy. It was delivered to me in aldermanic comments, ensuring that there was virtually no possibility for me to respond or even to read it. Frankly, I haven't even had a chance because of morning meetings to read the whole thing yet. So I think it speaks, it's pretty clear it's political motivation. The only thing that I did hear some things that obviously anybody would agree with, but some things that I would say that I would strongly disagree with is, if you did not have, and I did not have, as thick skin as a rhino, you couldn't last 5 minutes as mayor. So this has nothing to do with responding to criticism. This is a whole different story. Again, this is 3 months old. It's old wine and old bottles. I've got to deal with, now we've got a police advisory review board coming up. We've got Brick Streets plan. We've got downtown.
If a majority of the council, though, thinks you have a leadership program, whether you think you do or not, is there a leadership problem?
I think there is a problem with communication between all of the council members. Some of them, or not all, but some of the council members and myself. There is at least one council member, David Sage, who has almost never communicated with me in over 2 years. That's a problem. And that helps breed misunderstanding and people deciding what they want to hear. So, yeah, leadership is always is definitely a two-way street. And I think it's pretty clear what my priorities are. And there are some, frankly, that I think even misunderstand the role of what we have, and that is a city manager and empowered mayor form of government. There are many different city manager forms of government, and I think that that's something that that there's some misunderstanding. And yeah, I mean, essentially, well, yes, to send an email where I've used the word crazy. I didn't realize crazy was such a radioactive thing, as a thing that most people have focused on, to somebody who has physically accosted me and sued me and the city, cost a lot of money.
I think the aldermen are also speaking out about how you've been treating them. Some of them refer to you privately as a bully.
I think that is, there's not one ounce of truth to that. I have never said to any city council member, there are a couple city council members, I think, who are bullies, but, but I have never said to anybody, hey, you owe me. I have never said, hey, I need your vote on this. You got to vote this way. Or if you don't vote this way, I'm going to do whatever. That's the ward politics of Rahm Emanuel. There's just no truth to that whatsoever. Do I speak strongly, especially when it comes to downtown? You better believe it. When it comes to our older neighborhoods, you better believe it. When we have a city council that wants to to keep having study after study before they act, you better believe I'm going to push them.
Your leadership style provoked at least one opponent in the last election.
Actually provoked four.
Yeah, but Alderman Diana Howman was most like you in program and least like you and emphasized leadership style as a matter of sure. of her campaign. That was nearly all of her campaign, in fact.
And she came in last.
Yeah. The aldermen who signed the letter believe they and the community are owed an apology. What do you think?
If anybody wants to come in and talk to me individually, I have yet to have anybody individually ask for me an apology, anybody in the city. But if I will be very happy to explain to them what the circumstances were. And if they still think, hey, you know, that really was over the top, I don't think you should have done that, I'll be happy to apologize to any citizen of Bloomington. But we're certainly not going to get the complete story. And I don't mean not just from GLT, I don't mean that a criticism of you, but actually mainly the Pantograph has, frankly, probably milked this for all it's worth.
Why engage publicly in an unseemly fashion, or even at all, with regular critics like the gentleman that you referred to as crazy?
We're not talking about somebody who's a regular critic. We're talking about somebody who's been suing me for years. I've just had to spend well over half of my mayor's salary for the entire year just on legal fees to deal with a frivolous lawsuit.
What's gained, though, by the mayor entering the fray on such a person when it's such a contentious issue and when
obviously, there's nothing to be gained. But we're also talking about this. This happened back in July when it wasn't actually just me. I was in Japan, and this is where this happened, where there was the entire sister city delegation was upset, thinking, oh my God, because all of their records were FOIA'd. What does this mean? I mean, we're used to this. That is, people in the city, we're used to all of this. And they weren't, and one of them was going to cancel their extended trip to see their family. And I said, no, this is, don't worry about it. This, unfortunately, is standard operating procedure. There's also, I think, misunderstanding to what I said to the council 2 weeks ago. And it is to try to understand what some of the root causes are of, the real story, the real problem, the real political environment within our city. And it's a very small number of people who have a lot of power and a lot of authority. And that you know, not just refers to people on the city council, but that also, of course, refers to the media. Let's put it this way. You know, nobody is going to get an Edward R. Murrow Award for governing these people, at least in a generic way.
You and the council have to pull together on some important
Absolutely.
Issues.
And we had, not we the had least 9-0 of which votes is on everything last night, Charlie.
Yeah, not the least of which is requiring, there was a 6-3
There
wasn't a vote, but it was certainly a 6-3 decision on that letter. Certainly,
yeah, that's part of the point. There was never a vote.
And no,
the way that it was,
it is a vote to get a letter like that handed to you.
But
and they are rebuking
if I can finish my point. The point is that's the way that it was is given to me was also something that is certainly. Not conventional, especially
so
when
how would
everybody
you characterize
else has
your
it.
How would you characterize your relationship with the city council, given that unorthodox way and given these straw poll?
Good question. That's what I'm trying to figure out too myself. And I haven't even read through all of the materials. But certainly, if I were going to criticize a colleague, I'd let them know in advance. I wouldn't give the information to the media in advance. I would let them at least think about it. And that's not civil discourse either. So there are definitely some serious issues in terms of communication that do have to be raised. And definitely my style is very different. I want to get things done. And I think I was elected to get things done. I do believe that I'm the only person who is elected, and it's true, from the entirety of the city of Bloomington. And I think in the last election, they did not vote. Citizens did not vote for slow or no action or cut and gut. And there are some on the city council who bristle at that style. And I've tried to work with them, and some have tried to work with me. I'm not saying it's just a one-way street, but you're absolutely right. There's much more that has to be done to improve communication.
So, like what? What do you have to do to make it clear that you're not trying to browbeat them, to make it clear that you value consensual deliberative process, and to repair this relationship with at least six of the council?
Well, obviously to meet with them if they will return my phone calls and if they will sit down. I mean, that's what's necessary. You can't communicate if people don't return your phone calls.
So you got six people who aren't returning your phone calls?
No. I said of that. You said of the six, some will actually, of course. Some of them I deal with, but if some of them don't, that's a problem.
It's not just the city council, though. Outbursts like this that you've made hurt your chances of getting public-private partnerships, don't they? You know, if you're not viewed as a reliable or even-keeled actor, some of your program priorities are at risk.
Right. Well, again, of the people that I've interacted with, I've not had that problem because I do have consistency with the people that we interact with, whether they're boards and commission chairs or whether they're people outside. I think that that's the case. And people know that I am not going to make a promise to people that I don't intend to deliver upon. And that's one of the most important things as we move forward. I do have a very good relationship with all of our intergovernmental partners. I think we're talking about a subset. It's a majority of the Bloomington City Council. I do have to take a look at that and try to figure out how to move to the next step because there is no choice. I'm not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. And we, in spite of the acrimony of last night, right, we didn't, and that was surprising because we had a very productive session, you know, approving a whole bunch of different things that I think are largely very good for the community. Anti-sprawl measures, brick streets, you know, police review board. Actually, I've had lots of people, mayors from throughout the country say, how did you get a police review board? So we are making progress in spite of this lack of trust, frankly, on both sides. And that doesn't, and again, let me also make it clear, I'm not saying, and I'm not implying at all, that I couldn't handle all kinds of things differently. I've never said that. In fact, that was part of my message 2 weeks ago that apparently was misinterpreted. Again, the human beings in communication, certainly one of the things you learn as mayor is you have to think things through very carefully so things are not misinterpreted. But at the end of the day, it's not criticism. I'm criticized in every single day. And that's good. That's democracy. You have to have that. So it's not a question of criticism. It's something much deeper than that. And that's what I was trying to get across 2 weeks ago.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're with Mayor Terry Renner of the City of Bloomington. Do you think the move to restrict elected official use of procurement cards or city credit cards is politically motivated?
Of course it's politically motivated, just as the letter was. I don't think there's any question about that. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or even an 8-year-old to recognize that.
That was a unanimous vote.
Yes. But who's going to vote no? Right. I support it. I mean, I said before, I'm not going to veto it. I think on balance, it really doesn't hurt. I think there's some things in it that I don't think are very good ideas. Some things I think are good ideas. But I did try to use the opportunity last night to clarify we have a very tight, even before last night, and I don't think it's really any tighter than it was after last night. We have a very tight procurement policy. You have to have receipts. You have to have certain things that have to be met beforehand. All of these are very, very tight. And so some of them, because there's often a story about this, almost every day I get people misunderstanding, thinking that who knows how many, you don't even know how many procurement cards are out there. Who knows how much stuff is put on the city's credit card.
Well, yours is the only one right now in the city council.
The one, the city council, first of all, does not have
right
credit cards. And it was an administrative aide within the mayor's office who actually booked the ticket that was in question.
No, should you have used the card for lunch while on leave?
I have absolutely. I paid it back only because to try to avoid a bad story, that didn't happen. Because I wasn't really on leave the way that you're thinking about it. This is not like you're at State Farm or whether I'm at any other situation where I'm gone. I was not in City Hall for about 2 weeks. And then for 2 weeks, I began to plan to come back. And there were many meetings. Once I had the meeting with Scott Black, it was expressly about what happens when you come back. What are the priorities next? I had everyday phone calls. Everyday people are talking.
Okay, let's ask it this way. Should you have used the credit card while the council was considering restricting credit card use? The optics of it don't show you in a good light.
Right, and you are talking about optics. Absolutely.
So what were you thinking?
I was conducting city business.
But you know you have opposition. Why give them ammo?
Once again, I should have, perhaps, but a $28 with tip, tax, everything, lunch, talking expressly about what happens when you come back. I guess I should continue to realize that no matter how trivial something is, there will be somebody, either political opponents or council members or even media members, who will bring it up, even if it's less than nothing, even if it's absolutely appropriate. And then the thing I made yesterday is, if you're paying a mayor $12,000 a year, as we do, you're going to have time, most of your work, if you're going to do deep dive, other than constant phone calls and emails, before the working hours begin, at lunch, or perhaps immediately afterwards. And whether you're talking to board and commission members or whether you're talking to people who are businessmen and women, our intergovernmental neighbors, there are any number of people that you've got to talk to and really get to the bottom of things. A quick 10-minute phone call doesn't do it most of the time. Those things are absolutely essential if you're going to go forward. And that's the core point. It depends if you want your mayor to do something. If you don't want your mayor to do something, that's a whole other story. And I think it is politically motivated. I think there are some people, very small number, because obviously they didn't win the last election, who really don't want the mayor to do much of anything.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker in the studio with Mayor Terry Renner of Bloomington. You're going to try to shore up a city budget without a city manager and with a council that can't seem to decide on an interim. Will the vacancy at the top with city manager Hale's departure affect the ability to complete a balanced budget?
No. We're going to have... And the other thing is, as mayor, in our system of council manager form of government, there are many systems of council manager forms of government. And this is something that several of our council members, I think, do not understand. That's why I have many times asked them to go to the National League of Cities, the Illinois Municipal League, so that they have some comparative basis. I have a line item veto, and I have a veto over the budget. If there are wasted items, I can pull them. When I'm working with staff, I can say, show me some numbers that I can live with. I have not done that before, because in the past, my problem has not been with staff putting together the budget, and I don't think I have a problem with staff putting together the budget this time either. My problem has been at the other end, where the city council has to realize they have to pay their bills. Now, at this point, we are going to be naming, later this afternoon, a city manager, an acting city manager, and we will formally vote on it within the next few days.
Is that Mr. Rasmussen?
I cannot confirm or deny anything at this point. Essentially, a press release will be coming out shortly.
So can you talk about Steve Rasmussen's accomplishments and what he would bring to the interim position if it were to be him?
If it were Steve Rasmussen, I can tell you, when I ask Steve Rasmussen for something, he gets stuff done. So if I ask him, hey, we've got a problem on X whatever street it might be. We've got a broken sewer line, or we've got some people. It's usually something that's not quite that dramatic. It's usually something that's a gray area. Is it really the city's responsibility? Is it really the person's responsibility? And he makes sure that at least people are listened to, that they are heard. People do not feel ignored if Steve Rasmussen is responsible for questions or problems. I call him, things happen.
Was City Manager Hales involved with helping to select the interim city manager?
It depends upon what you mean by involved. I can't talk about, I hate to sound like Bill Clinton, depends on what your definition of is.
Too late.
Too late. There was certainly some consultation and discussion with Mr. Hales.
Is that appropriate?
Pardon me?
Is that appropriate, considering he's outgoing and you're the policy setters, you and the council?
My opinion on that is that I think it's most appropriate for us as a group to hire the interim on our own.
What kind of message does the council's either deliberativeness or delay, depending on where you stand on this, to decisively choose an interim send to prospective candidates seeking the job on a permanent basis?
Well, I think that they would need to understand the broad picture of our city council. And certainly, sometimes we've been able to make quick decisions. Sometimes our city council has not been able to make quick decisions that would normally not be difficult. Again, one of the things that we will find out more is when we hire a search firm for a permanent city manager and to say, okay, you do a Google search on us. What are our red flags? What needs to happen? You know, or how attractive are we? We certainly are attractive in terms of size. We're attractive because we are in the process of downtown revitalization. We're attractive because of our location, actually. So, and we're attractive because of how much money we pay. Now, are we attractive because of the fact that there's acrimony on the city council? I think that's not going to be one of our strong points.
City Manager Hales was selected at a time when the fiscal issues were the overriding sensibility. You're faced with a structural budget deficit that could balloon to $40 million in deficit spending if left unaddressed over the next 4 years. So has anything really changed? Do you still need an aggressive fiscal manager and not much else? Or what other skill sets are you looking for, you personally?
Me personally, economic development. Downtown, older neighborhoods, controlling sprawl, those are really important to us. Our fiscal situation is much better than it was when Mr. Hales came in. We had a situation where we could barely even make payroll. We have a $15-plus million reserve right now, for example. So is this budget time going to be tough? Yeah, because one of it is the state of Illinois took about $750,000 from us. That's a problem. We don't know if they're going to take more from us. We don't know what's happening at the federal level. There's at least as much instability there, although we don't really depend upon the federal government for much other than community development block grant money. That would be a travesty in terms of our ability to fix older neighborhoods and really to make sure that our neighborhoods do not deteriorate. So essentially, I would say that we've got fiscal challenges, but we're going to be able to handle them. We've got problems. We do not have a crisis. We had a crisis back in 2009.
Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Sound Ideas.
I know your mornings can be chaotic, and you look at those news alerts, you glance at the headlines, and it only makes things more confusing.
They will not vote this week on their latest proposal to dismantle.
Secretary Tom Price has resigned after mounting pressure.
In southern Puerto Rico have been standing in line for water that they can't.
Morning Edition has in-depth coverage of the day's biggest stories, plus the conversations you need to hear, all up to date and in one place. Listen every day.
Listen to Morning Edition tomorrow on GLT.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Community Players hit some high notes in music and comedy in their latest production. Laura Kennedy has more in this edition of the GLT Datebook.
Community Players in Bloomington presents the musical comedy Sister Act, running November 2nd through the 19th. Ashley Fager is the assistant director of the show, which was a successful movie before landing on Broadway. And she says the show has a relevant message to the way we live today.
I think it's the appeal of everything that's kind of going on in the world nowadays. And it just kind of shows that everybody's human, everybody makes mistakes, and everybody has a chance to turn their life around in the end. If you are familiar at all with the movie, it follows a pretty similar plotline to that. Dolores Van Cartier, she is a soul singer wanting to make it big. She keeps auditioning at clubs and just can't seem to get anywhere. One night, she finds herself in the wrong place at the wrong time. And through the help of the police, they wind up putting her in a local church to go undercover as a nun. to kind of hide out until things calm down and they can find the people that they're looking for to protect her, basically. And in the end, she realizes that she is really good at heart. She brings a new perspective to the nuns that she befriends.
And she helps them.
And she helps them immensely. And they help her. And it's a good turning around of someone's life and bringing a new perspective of other worlds together.
So this is a real feel-good kind of a play.
Yeah, it's very funny. It's very kind of on-your-seat action, like, ooh, what's going to happen next? It'll keep audiences entertained.
And you're the assistant director.
Correct.
What are your responsibilities?
Marsha Weiss, who's the director of the show, she is a veteran of Community Players. The most recent show I think she did was Little Shop of Horrors, so if anybody saw that. But my job as the assistant director is to basically make sure Marsha doesn't lose her mind. she actually gave me the privilege of being able to direct a couple of the scenes in the show, because I did go to college and majored in theater, and I was performance and production. So I'm kind of really well versed in every area of theater, if you will. So it was kind of nice to start stepping onto this side of things with her. And I basically do a lot of Facebook posts of, oh, this is what we're doing this night. If anybody has questions, I record a bunch of stuff so they can maybe go back and watch their dances. I kind of help everybody a little bit.
So you're sort of the techie social media kind of person.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
kind of an interesting approach
yeah,
there.
Definitely.
Does Community Players really try to foster younger people and give them a chance to get real practical experience in theater?
Absolutely. We have people, for example, like Bruce Parrish, who has been around since our 75th season, and we are in our 96th right now. So he's been around for a long time. Or you have people like myself, or Latricia Green, who's the lead in this show. We've been involved with Players for maybe a couple of years, but they're definitely welcoming. I know that's one of the biggest things a lot of people say is it's a family there. Everybody feels so welcome, even if they don't know anybody. We're all about intermingling that veteran of Community Players with the, hey, come and be involved with us, and we'll make it welcome for you.
Sister mm-hmm. Act is a Broadway musical that
yes.
is actually based upon a movie. Mm-hmm. Are there certain challenges inherent with that, a play that's based on a movie?
There can be quite a few difficulties with it, especially if it's a familiar movie. Some of the songs are a little bit different, and especially with Whoopi Goldberg playing the lead in that movie, everybody knows
that's a hard act to follow anytime.
Everybody knows who she is. Like I said, Latricia Green, she's been in a couple shows at Players. She was recently in Little Mermaid. She's been in Avenue Q, so very talented, can act the part phenomenally, and I really think people will be impressed with her performance.
Tell me about the music. Is it sort of gospel-y? Is it R&B-ish?
It is actually a pretty good mixture of both. It's very upbeat and catchy. Definitely like a soulful R&B jazz meets gospel and mm-hmm. very upbeat and uplifting music.
Well, this is a show with a predominantly female cast, mm-hmm. and there aren't a lot of them out there. So this really gives you an opportunity to show off the female talent in Community Players.
Absolutely. We've got Latricia Green, like I said, who is playing Dolores, and then Sharon Russell, who's playing Mother Superior. They are two very prominent female leads in the show. We also have a newcomer to Community Players. Sarah Bertram is playing Mary Robert. And her voice is absolutely phenomenal. She's a postulate, and she's very quiet and very reserved, and Dolores kind of helped brings her out of her shell. I believe the cast itself is 32, so probably about 22 of them are females.
That's Ashley Fager, assistant director of Sister Act at Community Players in Bloomington. The show kicks off with a Pay What You Can night on November 2nd and runs through the 19th at the theater on Robin Hood Lane. I'm Laura Kennedy.
Ashley Fager admits there are plenty of great songs in the show, but her personal favorite is the rousing Raise Your Voice. This is from the original London cast recording. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The jazz combo, co-founded by Normal native Ryan Weisite, makes a return appearance to the Twin Cities tonight. Weisite is the saxophonist for Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers, which takes the first part of its name from vocalist and fellow co-founder Meg Farrell. The group will have a new album until when they play jazz up front in downtown Bloomington on Wednesday. GLT's John Norton talked with Weisite recently via Skype from his home in New York City.
It's leading off the brand new self-titled album from Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers, The Jitterbug Waltz, Ryan Weisite, co-founder of the band, the saxophonist in the band. Nice to catch up with you again, Ryan. Great album.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks, John.
On Jitterbug Waltz, are you playing clarinet on this one?
No, the clarinet part is a friend of ours, Dennis Lichtman, who's part of the Mona's scene. On that tune, I'm playing very briefly some bass saxophone, and then the tenor at the end, which kind of takes the lead part at the end.
Well, what jumps out at me for this album is Meg, actually. She seems to be having more fun. She seems more relaxed than the last time I remember listening to the album. Cloudburst and Here Comes That Man are two songs that kind of jump out on that one.
Yeah, those two were really fun. And I think this was our first album that we did in a proper recording studio. We realized that we needed to bring it because we were paying money and the stakes were higher than usual. So, yeah, I think we all kind of brought an energy that we maybe didn't have on our previous recordings.
Okay. How did you choose the songs that you wanted to cover on this album?
You know, it wasn't that difficult, and it was kind of a quick decision. It was a lot of, like, gut feelings. It was a lot of what are our favorite songs to play? And there were a couple songs when we were planning the record that we were having a blast playing, and we thought, let's do them.
I was blue and I was always wearing a frown because my girl had put me down. Then we met and you can bet I knew from the first you were my love, because that's the old way. Now burst my heart, feel it through the day you call mine. I hope that we do will never say goodbye. Clouds of gray have silver linings when they reverse.
What's new with Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers since last time we talked?
The big thing that we're doing now that we weren't doing as much last time we talked was we're looking at touring with the band more, getting out more.
Getting out of New York City?
Getting out of
more?
New York City, yeah. Maybe trying to build maybe a bit more of a national fan base than just a regional one. So, yeah, definitely more touring. We're going to start hitting up jazz festivals to try to... With a few exceptions, we're a regional band, you know, tri-state area, New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut. But we're trying to get out of that because we want to tour. We want to play other places. We kind of want to have a little bit more of a wider experience with our music.
Well, let me go there. You're playing hot jazz, and you're doing it so well, and you're having so much fun doing it. How receptive is the music that you're playing on a more national level? Are you able to play festivals or halls that maybe don't necessarily feature jazz all the time?
I think that what we're doing is accessible enough that even people who aren't jazz heads or jazz aficionados or who even maybe don't normally enjoy going to see a live jazz concert or it's not their cup of tea necessarily, I think that our music is fun and accessible enough that no matter where we're playing, I think people will enjoy it. You know, in a way, it's a roots music, just like Appalachian music, just like country music, just like bluegrass and the blues. So I think it definitely will fit in a lot of the more roots-oriented roots-oriented music festivals. You know, maybe clubs that normally have more country and maybe blues music. I think our music would be a good match for those venues.
Yeah, and that's nice to hear because what you're playing is really jazz music for people who don't even think they really like jazz, and then they come out to the show probably and go, hey, I really like this.
Yeah, we've gotten that a lot. We've gotten that a lot. We've even gotten people coming up sometimes at the end and saying, what kind of music was that? Just because, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, we've had that conversation where jazz can be a little bit stuffy or considered a little bit stuffy, and that's the opposite of what you guys are.
Yeah, we're trying to, I think we're just trying to take it back to the basics, and where jazz came from was a very different place to where from where jazz is now. And I'm not putting that down. I love modern jazz. I love contemporary jazz. But there definitely is an accessibility with the earlier stuff and maybe just a jubilance and an excitement and a level of fun that you maybe lose as you get later into jazz's history and the music gets so much more complex.
So much fun playing the music of Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers. Ryan Weisite, Normal Native, is our guest here on GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. Well, you mentioned touring and how you're trying to break out into a more national scene. You're doing that with Pokey Lafarge. When we talked last time, you were just beginning to go out on tour with him. And
I still am. I just got back 2 days ago from about a 10-day run, and I'm going to be spending most of December out with Pokey. So, you know, and that was partially the impetus for me wanting to get Sweet Meg and our band into that circuit. It's just a different experience when you're out touring and you're playing a different city each night and you're playing for different people each night. I've had a blast playing with Pokey, and I look forward to continue playing with him, and at the same time bringing Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers up to that level of touring. And
yeah, when we last talked, Ryan, you mentioned how much fun you were having because you were just going out on tour for the first time. But you also mentioned you were able to learn a little bit behind the scenes of what goes on with a real well-run tour. What have you picked up that you've been able to adapt for Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers now?
One thing that's easy to forget, well, in the beginning it was easy for me to forget, is if we're planning a longer tour, just the basic things like accommodations and where you're going to stay. And, you know, if you're out for 3 weeks, comfort becomes a big thing because it's generally lacking because you're not at home. You don't have the niceties that you have at your place. So getting the little things taken care of, like where you're going to stay, making sure that food, you have good food options, things that seem maybe more inconsequential at the beginning, when you're out for a lengthy period of time, it all contributes to the morale of the band. Mm. And morale is huge when you're out for so long.
There's a man from way uptown, take away your blues. And every time the man comes through, the vipers spread the news. He's known from coast to coast, to every cat alive. And whenever we make a dose, to the man who brings the dive.
And while you have been out on tour with Pokey, you got a chance to play on the Conan O'Brien show. How cool was that?
Oh, that was a dream come true. I've been a huge fan of Conan O'Brien since his days as a writer for The Simpsons. And I remember watching his late night show that was on after Leno back in the early days. So getting to meet him was just an incredible pleasure. And the whole team was so nice. And just getting to play a song on late night television has always been a bit of a dream of mine. So that was very, very cool.
And you were playing the Barry on that song, right?
Yes, yeah.
That's not your first instrument, is it? Aren't you an
alto
player?
No, in fact, I didn't even own a Barry until I got the gig with Pokey. And he said, well, you know, the saxophone chair has a Barry part. And I said, well, I don't have a Barry. I'm going to have to start looking around for one. So then I bought the instrument specifically for the gig. I'd played it a little bit before in college, but not very much. The least out of all the saxophones.
And here you are adapting it now for use in Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers. That's pretty cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Weisite, looking forward to seeing you at Jazz Up Front here real soon, Ryan. What kind of room is Jazz Up Front to play for you guys?
you know, it's great because it's a listening room. People are there to listen to music. And at the same time, it's not stale. It's still a very nice environment, you know, a nice bar. You can get a drink, you know. It's not stuffy, but it is a listening room. And so it's always fun for us to play for people who are there just to listen to music. We can, you know, maybe play a wider range of emotional content because people are there for you and they're willing to go with whatever direction the music's going in. It's also just very cool to be in a jazz club, you know, in the town that I grew up. You know, I think this is James's second or third jazz club in town over the past couple decades. And
James Gaston, yeah.
Yeah, he's been tirelessly promoting jazz and blues in the city, and so it's very cool to see jazz up front sticking around and being a successful business, and it's fun to play at a jazz club in my hometown.
Normal native Ryan Weissite talking about his band Sweet Meg and the Wayfarers, which plays jazz up front in downtown Bloomington on Wednesday. Showtime, 8 p.m. Our website is also where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast and the individual stories and interviews from Judy Valenta, John Norton, and Laura Kennedy. Also, thanks to Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner for his time. Let us know what you think of Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM. Tweet about the show. Use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 FM GLT and WGLT.org.